In order that all sentient beings may attain Buddhahood, from my heart I take refuge in the three jewels. In order that all sentient beings may attain Buddhahood, from my heart I take refuge in the three jewels. In order that all sentient beings may attain Buddhahood, from my heart I take refuge in the three jewels. Whatever the virtues of the many fields of knowledge, all our steps on the path of omniscience, may these arise in the great. In the clear mirror of intellect, O Manjushri, please accomplish this. Good evening and welcome to the world of Maitreya, the future Buddha, who will appear many, many years from now after this current period has deteriorated into complete chaos and all dharma is lost for long periods of time. Maitreya will arise and once again present the dharma. It seems like we're approaching that era quickly. So we're on page 26 of the text, the distinguishing phenomena from their intrinsic nature, Maitreya's Dharma, Dharmatava, Bhanga, how to access the absence of apprehended and apprehender, which is the culmination of this process of transformation. So here's like the summary of that, and then we'll go through the details. On the second topic, and so let's see, the first topic. It's funny when you look back. So on the second topic, when you go back to page 23, you have on the second topic again. It's a wacky outline. Let's take a quick look at our outline. Let's see. Dharma, Dharmatava, okay. So the presentation of the treatise, that there's samsara and nirvana. What are the characteristics of both? First phenomena, then their intrinsic nature and summary. Further elaboration of phenomena in 6 points. And here we have five of them, five of those points. And the sixth one was the characteristics of the nature of phenomena. And we have the underlying rationale. And then, are they the same phenomenon, their intrinsic nature, or different? The basis, those in common, not in common. Talking about sentient beings, the environment, and their mind streams. And then the non-existence of apprehended and apprehender, which has two parts. And the second part is how to access this. Once it has been established that what appears to be apprehended does not exist, what appears to be apprehended are things like names, forms, ideas, people, trees, planets. It has also been established that what appears to apprehend does not exist either. If there's no actual apprehension of an object, then there's no faculty that is conducting any apprehension or apprehending, because there's no apprehension of an object, so there's no apprehending and there's no apprehender. Due to this, access to the non-existence of what appears as apprehended and apprehended is established because of the full emergence of that which has no beginning. The full emergence of the true nature of reality is without beginning, that which is without beginning. So The reason for this is that the complete lack of establishment of duality is fully established. That duality has no basis, no reality, is fully established and has been. In summary, earlier, and will be later discussed more in detail. Once it has been established that what appears to be apprehended does not exist, this is Kenpo Shenge's condensation of Vasubandhu's commentary. It has also been established that what appears to apprehend does not exist either. In other words, without anything apprehended, there cannot be any apprehender. Due to this reason, access to the non-existence of what appears as apprehended and apprehender is established because of the full emergence of the grasping of apprehended and apprehender that is due to that which has no beginning, the habitual tendencies. Due to this reason, that the apprehender does not exist as well as the apprehended, access to the non-existence, entering into the experience or the realm of the non-existence of the duality of apprehender and apprehender, is established, is true. Because there is the full emergence of the grasping of apprehender and apprehended that is due to that which has no beginning, the habitual tendencies. So we understand the lack of establishment because of the emergence of the duality. The reason for this is that despite the complete lack of establishment of the duality of apprehended and apprehender, one witnesses the arising of a consciousness that is in conflict with that lack of establishment, and so on. For this reason, it is fully established. Despite the complete lack of establishment of the duality, one witnesses the arising of a consciousness that is in conflict with the lack of establishment of the duality, and so on. And for this reason, it is fully established, it being the non-existence of the apprehender and apprehended, which is totally confusing. And let's see how Mipham unravels that for us. Okay. Let's stop sharing the outline. Well, we'll come back to it. If what appears to be apprehended does not exist by its very own essence, so if objects do not exist by their own essence, apart from the subject, the apprehender, then what appears to be the apprehender does not actually exist either. If there's just a false mirage of appearing, then there's no real experience of that. The reason here is that the apprehender exists in relation or in dependence upon the apprehended, not in isolation. Therefore, awareness is devoid of both apprehender and apprehended in all their various forms. Awareness is the larger experience and is established. Free from subject and object by its very own nature, awareness is a mere indescribable luminosity. So that's the nature of luminosity, an indescribable luminosity. What did I say? That's the nature of awareness, sorry. It is no different from the thoroughly established suchness that is empty of the two forms of self. So awareness and emptiness are not separate. Luminosity and emptiness are not separate. Since even proponents of the mind-only school must realize this Why mention that it must also be realized by followers of the Madhyamaka middle way? According to the mind-only school, the significance of all 16 forms of emptiness. So in the Prajna Paramita Sutras, the Buddha rattles off many different types of emptiness, which are collected at some point in those sutras into 16 types. And then also expanded later into 20 types of emptiness, the latter four being sort of a summary of the first 16, but sort of odd, like, how can there be types of nothingness? Isn't there just one emptiness? Isn't that like saying there's an emptiness of the chair and an emptiness of the table? And the Buddha says that ultimately there's this one type of emptiness. But it's helpful to understand that 16, or the enumeration, as a way of thoroughly understanding emptiness, I guess. The significance of all 16 forms of emptiness is perfectly complete within this nature. I guess this nature is the union of the indescribable luminosity and emptiness. Since it cannot be conceived of or expressed as being outer, inner, or any other dualistic phenomena, it is held to be beyond elaborations. By the middle way school, the mind is held to be truly existent. The mind, the awareness that experiences the absence of duality. Nevertheless, a subtle vestige of a realist philosophical tenet does not remain concerning this ineffable consciousness. Does remain. So the Chittamatra presentation of, let's see, what did they just say in the last paragraph? Since it cannot be conceived of or expressed as being outer, inner, or any other dualistic phenomena, is held to be beyond elaborations. And so they claim that the awareness is truly established as being beyond elaboration and beyond apprehended and apprehender. And from another point of view, that view of the Chittamatra represents the clinging to a subtle vestige of a realist philosophical tenet system. So that vestige does remain concerning this ineffable consciousness. The way that they describe this ineffable consciousness implies that they are considering it to have a subtle status of reality, of being real. This position holds that the essence of this consciousness truly exists. So this is Mipham commenting on this Yogacara text and putting down the Chittamatra as if they believed that the consciousness truly exists. Yet if this view is undermined using reasoning, and one instead asserts that the mind, devoid of apprehended and apprehender, the duality, is itself not truly existent, that this mind is in a state of union with emptiness, primordially pure and luminous, one has arrived at the genuine middle way. So if you say it correctly, if you describe this mind correctly, you will say that this mind is devoid of the duality, which the Chittamatra says, and it's itself is not truly existent, but it is in a state of union with emptiness, primordially pure and luminous. So it's a little bit difficult to figure out exactly what does the Chittamatra say that is considered to be wrong by Mipham and so many others. Do you have it?
I'm sorry.
Did you get it? Did you figure out what they said that was wrong?
No, I mean, to me, when they say it's beyond elaborations, isn't that putting it into the realm of non-thing?
It certainly does seem that way. Certainly does seem that way. Not truly existent. Up above, it is no different. This awareness that is by its own nature a mere indescribable luminosity is no different from the thoroughly established suchness that is empty, the two forms of self. So this awareness is an indescribable luminosity and the emptiness of the two forms of self. But it appears the implication, so the next sentence is, since even Chittamatrans say this, of course Madhyamakans say this, and then it feels like there's a but in the next sentence. But according to the mind-only school, the significance of all forms, all 16 forms of emptiness, is perfectly complete within this nature. Doesn't seem, I don't think there can be anything wrong with that.
I don't think the but comes until the following,
Paragraph.
where he says the subtle vestige, but it seems like that he's just talking about it from the conceptual point, from the idea of, oh, this system believes this, but it doesn't really articulate it the way you're trying to find it,
Yeah, he doesn't say what is their mistake in description. He's
Right.
just saying that they may make a mistake. A subtle vestige of realist philosophical tenet does remain concerning this ineffable consciousness. This position holds that the essence of this consciousness truly exists. So that's their mistake, that they say the consciousness truly exists. And he doesn't have any quotes, certainly, but so we take his word for it for now. Yet, if this view is understood using reasoning, one instead asserts that the mind devoid of duality is itself not truly existent, that this mind is in a state of union with emptiness, primordially pure and luminous, one has arrived at the genuine middle way. So, he's just saying, he does seem to be saying, like, if you take what the Chittamatrans say and understand it, from a certain point of view, it's identical to the Madhyamaka. Therefore, we may draw a distinction between these two great vehicle schools, the middle way and the mind only, in terms of whether or not this subtle level of fixation has been eliminated or not. Aside from this, however, in terms of the practice of formal meditation and post-meditation, there is a great deal of similarity between these two schools, so much that even the great scholars and saints of the noble land of India did not differentiate between these two when it came to the practice of the great vehicle. In their practice, they did not differentiate between Chittamatra middle way, according to Meepo. As explained above, by understanding how the duality of the apprehended and apprehender does not exist, one may rest one-pointedly in the nature of this non-existence, whereby one may directly access the non-existence of what appears to be the apprehended and apprehender. In other words, one will behold the non-dual intrinsic nature if one is able to rest one-pointedly in the nature of this non-existence. One will behold the non-dual intrinsic nature. It does not, one may object, make sense that this sort of non-dual intrinsic nature is thoroughly established from the beginning. Given its existence, it could not fail to manifest, and there could therefore not be any delusion of dualistic appearances. So Meepom is inserting a statement by the Chittamantrans here. And then he responds, "This, however, is not the case. The habitual tendencies associated with the dualistic appearance of apprehended, apprehended, apprehender, apprehended, have been in operation throughout beginningless time. See, no, serving to obscure thatness, these tendencies have been present alongside the mind's luminous nature. As these habitual tendencies fully emerge, meaning that they become active or ripen, they cause delusion and cyclic existence to occur." So we're talking about the habitual tendencies, which are accumulated over time, and begs the question of how did they start? Well, then one may continue, if they have existed alongside this nature throughout time without beginning, then wouldn't it be impossible to eliminate them if they're unproduced? This as well is not the case, because the apprehended and apprehender's lack of full establishment is itself completely established. Meaning that it is possible to eliminate them, even though they've existed since beginningless time in an appearing only way. This has presented the underlying rationale for accessing non-duality. Interesting way of framing that. The rationale for accessing non-duality, not easy to understand, but the three of them are getting at. Meepom, Kenpo Shenga, Vasubandhu, Maitreya, all four. An extensive explanation of the intrinsic nature. Okay, so we shift to the true nature of reality. This second section contains two further subdivisions, a summary, assuming using headings, and a detailed explanation of the meaning of these headings. Concerning the first, the treatise states, the headings, there are six ways of accessing the intrinsic nature. These six ways of accessing the intrinsic nature are unsurpassed because they access the one characteristics, two basis, three ascertainment, four contact, five recollection, and six having become of the identity of that. The last one is a little bit hard to understand. I guess the fruition and the state of having become of the identity of suchness. Accessing the intrinsic nature is explained next on this topic. It is said, these six ways of accessing the intrinsic nature are unsurpassed because they access the characteristics, the basis, ascertainment, contact, recollection, and six having become of the identity of that. Maybe we could say union with suchness. These six ways of accessing the intrinsic nature are unsurpassed, since those who fully understand these six topics will be able to comprehend with ease the entire range of qualities associated with complete purification. And what are these six? They consist of the knowledge of the characteristics of the intrinsic nature, the very basis or ground for their arising, or alternatively, the basis for continually abiding in the observation of the intrinsic nature. The ascertainment of the intrinsic nature, coming into direct contact with this nature in actuality, recollecting it again and again, and arriving at the identity of this intrinsic nature, or reaching the culmination of thorough establishment. Not easy to see, to understand what the hell he's talking about, is it? I don't know if anyone here has read this guy, this philosopher, Western philosopher, Wittgenstein. Anybody ever read Wittgenstein? Is he like this? Hard to understand.
That's what I've heard, but I haven't read it.
Morgan has.
Yeah, he's very difficult to understand because he talks as though what he's saying is very simple, but it's not, and it's this weird sort of logic.
Sounds very familiar. This presentation, makes it sound like, oh, it's very straightforward and simple, and but okay. So to flesh those out, these six ways of accessing the intrinsic nature are unsurpassed, since those who fully understand these six topics will be able to comprehend with ease the entire range of qualities associated with complete purification. The culmination of the path, in other words. What are these six? They consist of the knowledge of the characteristics of the intrinsic nature, the very basis or ground for their arising. The ground for the arising of the characteristics of the intrinsic nature. Or alternatively, the basis for continually abiding in the observation of the intrinsic nature. That's interesting that he presents it in that alternative way, which makes it a little easier to understand. The first way is, it sounds as if like there are these observable, truly existent qualities of the intrinsic nature, and then it's more like, well, being able to experience the true nature, abiding and observing it. Three, ascertainment of the intrinsic nature. Oh, so the arise first was the arising, or sorry, the basis or ground for the arising of the experience of abiding in the activity of observing the intrinsic nature. Second is the ascertainment, Cynthia.
Well, I just wondered this, talking about the continuously abiding in the observation of the intrinsic nature, and this is something that we typically talk about as unfindable, right?
It could be abiding in the unfindability.
So basically, are we saying that this continually abiding in the observation is continually abiding in unfindability?
Well, what you're saying points out a difference of, a clear difference in the way this the practice of the path is described in various traditions. And in this tradition, there's more of a positive sense, isn't there, of the true nature of reality. Like you can actually observe it. You can abide in the practice of observing the qualities of the intrinsic nature of of true reality. Whereas the Madhyamaka tradition would be much more talking about it as abiding and not experiencing anything.
So when you say this tradition, though, which I'm sorry, I'm always
Well, this is the
I
Yogacara
probably remember
tradition.
which is it?
Yogacara.
Oh, we are actually in the Yogacara in this.
These are
In
the five dharmas of Maitreya are the root
yes.
texts of the Yogacara.
So even with all that he said in the prior page that was dissing it, we're still in it.
He
Is
didn't
that?
diss Yogacara, he dissed Chittamatra.
Oh, okay. I got it. Okay.
Right?
Yes. All
Right. I
right.
think the way that our tradition receives the presentation of Yogacara is as a sort of higher level Madhyamaka.
Right, exactly. So I'm sorry, I sort of forgot that we're in the Yogacara mode here.
What channel am I in here?
Exactly. I need to, like, on any given day, especially in these classes
Yeah,
that we take.
really. We're certainly not in Fox News.
Right. So this is actually where the whole issues of Shentong and everything else even come up in the context of Yogacara.
This is the root of the Zhentong tradition, basically.
Yeah.
Right here, this text, more than any.
Yeah, sorry for being forgetful about about the channels.
So basically we learned and saw earlier when we looked at this list that this list is a stepwise, is a presentation of the stepwise fashion of the path, and is mapping out the path of preparation is number two, is a way of describing number two, of abiding in the observation of the intrinsic nature is the path of preparation. And then the path of seeing is the ascertainment of the intrinsic nature. So in like the Madhyamaka description of the path of seeing, they don't talk about what you see other than they say you see emptiness. And they don't really like talk about that as seeing emptiness. It's more like a non-seeing.
And this is why they often talk about the Yogacara as being a more sort of experiential quality to it, right?
I guess so, yeah.
That, I mean, that it has more of a sense of a practitioner's point of view, as opposed to,
which sort of means like it's more of a path-oriented. Right, it's sort of talking about the stages of the path. Madhyamaka is like fruition. Okay, there's nothing. And you abide not observing anything.
And that it tends to make the Madhyamaka almost seem philosophical if you're not actually there.
Right.
And that's why you're saying, as you say, the Yogacara is like the path so that you could ultimately get to that point of not just being talking about it as philosophy.
Yeah, that's good. Yep. So ascertainment of the intrinsic nature, path of seeing, and then path of familiarization is coming into direct contact. Actually, I have it wrong. Coming into direct contact is the seeing, path of seeing. So ascertainment, so backing me up here, backing up number one and two are the path of accumulation, the knowledge of the characteristics, learning about the true nature of reality as being empty and luminous or something like that, however you want to describe it. Passive accumulation is also the basis for the arising of the abiding and the observation of that, which is a really clunky way for saying the passive accumulation is the starting point for understanding the true nature, the intrinsic nature, right? That would be a simpler way of saying number two, I think. And number three is the ascertainment on the path of preparation of the true nature, intrinsic nature of reality. And then four, path of seeing is coming into direct contact with this nature and actuality. And then five is the path of familiarization, recollecting it again and again. So continually returning to the experience of direct contact with the true nature of reality. And the way it's described is that in equipoise, we experience direct contact with the true nature of reality, of the intrinsic nature, and then in outside of equipoise, we still experience the habitual pattern of duality, even though we've uprooted the the belief in duality. It still appears. And so in order to bring those two experiences of equipoise or samadhi and what we call post-meditation together, the rest of our life, we keep coming back to the meditation experience, both in meditation, through meditation, as well as through sort of remembering the meditation experience in post-meditation in the rest of our life. And then six is the culmination, the path of no more learning, arriving at the identity of this intrinsic nature, or reaching the culmination of thorough establishment, being thoroughly established in the realization, the embodiment of the experience of or realization of the true nature of reality. Second is the explanation of these six topics according to the meaning of the heading. So longer description, characteristics. The treatise states the characteristics are just as given before in the summary. And the commentary fleshes that out a little bit by repeating what was in the summary. The characteristics are those of suchness in which there are no distinctions between an apprehended or an apprehended, nor between something expressed and something that expresses it. This is just as was taught in the summary of this text. So the characteristics of the true nature is that it is without apprehender and apprehended. It is beyond being expressed and something that expresses it. The characteristics of the intrinsic nature, complete purification, were taught in the summary above, where it was shown that suchness is free of four factors, such as an apprehended. Thus, these characteristics can be understood as precisely in the manner that they were taught in that context of the summary above. Right, so he's talking about the summary that was given, let's see, on page 8 it would be, right? The brief presentation, the essence of cyclic existence and transcendence of suffering. The essence of the intrinsic nature is classified as the transcendence of suffering. And on page 11, we had this summary presentation of the nature of the intrinsic nature. It is defined as suchness. There's no distinction between apprehender and apprehended, the expressed and what expresses those four qualities. We're just referenced where we are on page 29, right? So back on 29, the characteristics of the intrinsic nature, complete purification, were taught in the summary above, where it was shown that suchness is free of four factors, such as an apprehended, and the remaining were the apprehender, something that expresses, and something that is expressed. Thus, these characteristics can be understood in precisely the manner which are in that context. Secondly, the basis concerning the second topic treatise states, the basis is all phenomena. So the basis for the true nature of phenomena is phenomena. It's not like emptiness or reality exists apart from phenomena. The basis for all phenomena is all phenomena and the sublime words of the sutras. Somehow the sublime words of the sutras are taken to be like a special class of phenomena, because they have this miraculous ability to express and bring about realization of the true nature of reality. The basis is form and all the other phenomena, meaning like the skandhas and all the dharmas, and all the sublime words of the sutras, such as proclamations and song. So there's traditionally 12 types of teachings of the Buddha: song, prose, poetry, etc. These two are presented in terms of thorough affliction and complete purification, respectively. The basis for the intrinsic nature is held to be the subject matter, referring to all the phenomena that comprise thorough affliction and complete purification, and the expressions used convey this subject matter, meaning all the collections of sutra, which consist of the 12 divisions of the Buddha's sublime words. Why is it that these are considered the basis for the intrinsic nature? Phenomena are held to be the basis because the transcendence of suffering is attained by ascertaining all phenomena in terms of convention as those which should be embraced, avoided, and so on, and in terms of the ultimate as being beyond observation. Once again, phenomena are held to be the basis because the transcendence of suffering is attained by ascertaining all phenomena in terms of convention as those which should be embraced, avoided, and so on, what to accept and what not to, what to reject, and in terms of the ultimate as being beyond observation. So abiding in the observation of the true nature of reality is abiding in the observation of something that is beyond observation. I guess. Just guessing. The Buddha's sublime words are also held to be the basis because it is by engaging in studying contemplation of these teachings that one eliminates ignorance concerning the manner in which one should practice the path. So these two realms are the basis for the intrinsic nature in a very different way. Phenomena are sort of like the location of the intrinsic nature or the receptacle of the intrinsic nature. And there's really no way to describe that. And then the teachings are that which brings about realization of the intrinsic nature. Let's see, thirdly, ascertainment. The treatise states, the ascertainment of that, presumably meaning the presentation that just preceded this, refers to the correct way of directing the mind based on the sutras of the great vehicle which constitutes the entire path of joining. So maybe once again I'm wrong. Here we have the path of joining. We had characteristics, basis, ascertainment, contact. So now ascertainment is the path of joining. Okay. Let's see, characteristics, basics. Yes, I'm sorry. I'm confused. Yeah. So the first two are path of accumulation, and then ascertainment was path of joining. So bottom of page 30, the ascertainment of that refers to the correct way of directing the mind based on the sutras of the great vehicle, which constitutes the entire path of joining as delineated in terms of study, reflection, and meditation. So in the three prajnas are indicated here as the main substance of the second of the five paths, the path of joining. And that corresponds with other descriptions of that path as being where, as the time on the path where Vipassana in particular is cultivated and brought to its culmination. Ascertainment, rather, of this meaning is explained to entail the entirety of the path of joining, which consists of directing one's mind in the correct manner in reliance upon the intended meaning of the great vehicle's sutras. The entirety of the path of joining, which consists of directing one's mind in the correct manner, as the correct manner as presented in the Mahayana sutras, the correct directing one's mind. So that would be different from settling one's mind in shamatha. In Vipassana, we direct our mind. Why is this referred to as ascertainment? It's referred to as such because one ascertains or recognizes the meaning of the intrinsic nature by directing one's mind to this meaning on the paths of accumulation and joining, utilizing the three forms of insight as spelled out in the sutras. Contact, the fourth, because the authentic view has been attained, contact occurs when suchness is attained and experienced. Suchness is attained. That's an interesting phrase. Suchness is attained. Contact occurs when suchness is attained and experienced. By way of the direct perception brought on by the path of seeing. Because the authentic view has been attained, contact occurs when suchness is attained and experienced by way of the direct perception brought on by the path of seeing. Their use of the term attained seems to be a little different than at least I would use that word. I wouldn't quite say you attained suchness. Maybe you attain the stage of understanding suchness or perceiving it.
Well, if you look at, if you use instead, if you skip the attained and just use the experienced word that they have there, it
yes.
might be more
totally
sync.
Yeah, but they repeated attained twice.
Yes, so. Yeah, no, I know, but it's really experienced by way of direct perception is the key point, I think, is what they're saying. That it's.
I hope so. Contact occurs in the commentary by Mipham. Contact occurs when the authentic supermundane view is attained with the eye of insight, the subject. Through this accomplishment, one attains and experiences the object suchness through the path of seeing. Once again, both attaining and experiencing suchness, divested of those stains that are eliminated through seeing, suchness is attained in actuality by way of direct perception during meditative equipoise and experienced via the authentic view in the ensuing attainment. Okay, so suchness is attained in equipoise and suchness is experienced by the authentic view via.
Would this be one of those? Would this be one of those cases where it would be interesting to see what the Tibetan word is that they're translating as attainment?
Yeah, I guess so. Okay, recollection concerning the fifth topic, the treatise states, recollection is the path of meditation on the nature that was seen with awareness, constituted by the aspects of enlightenment. This serves to eliminate the stains. Recollection is the path of meditating on the nature that was seen with awareness, i.e. in equipoise, i.e. on the path of seeing, constituted by the aspects of enlightenment. This serves to eliminate these stains constituted by the aspects of enlightenment. Thus, recollection is explained to serve the purpose of eradicating the residual stains that are characterized by being eliminated by meditating on suchness. So, meditating on suchness eliminates those stains which are known as the stains that are eliminated by meditating on suchness.
Are these the same as obscurations, what we call, or is that something? Is it something different that they would?
Well, it's a klesha obscuration, okay. I believe, because the cognitive obscuration has two parts to it. The gross part has been uprooted at the path of seeing, and then the subtle part doesn't really get uprooted until the eighth bhumi. Let's see. Recollection involves repeatedly recalling and realizing in the context of the path of cultivation what was realized when the intrinsic nature was directly seen with individual self-awareness at the prior stage. So the statement of the intrinsic nature being directly seen is not the sort of phraseology that a Madhyamaka would use necessarily. In this way, the term, was directly seen with individual self-awareness at the prior stage. This term, individual self-awareness, continues to come up over and over again, this idea of individual analysis, individual examination, individual awareness. And it's mystifying, like, what do they mean, individual? Is it like an instance of self-awareness in this case? Is it a self-awareness that sees things individually? What does it mean? Is it an awareness that analyzes the whole concept of individuality? I've been wondering if it's that, maybe. It's like the way that we talk about the unity, like the self appears to be continuous a unity and independent, and that phenomena appear as a unity. And is this individual self-awareness here called that? But in other places, we see individual examination, individual analysis. In prajna, which discriminates individually. Maybe it's like prajna, which analyzes or discriminates the whole idea of something as being an individual, separate from everything else. I don't know. It's
individual as in undivided.
Undivided, individual.
Undivided.
An individual would be undivided. It would be a unity, yeah.
Just another question. Earlier, just a little earlier, you said this is not the way the Majjhimikins would state this. Would you care to share how you think they would state that?
Yeah, this is where it's the sentence before the second part. It says what was realized when the intrinsic nature was directly seen. They don't often say that emptiness is seen. They're more apt to say when the absence of true nature is experienced, maybe seen, but it's like the absence of true nature as opposed to seeing the emptiness. Now, interestingly, the Galupas are famous for talking about emptiness as an object and talking about in the path of seeing and above, we see emptiness. Interestingly enough, even though they're the supposedly the most staunch Rong Chongpas in the crowd.
Does that mean that the Golukpas and the Yogacharans have a little tiny thing in common there?
It certainly seems that way. On the other hand, other like Kagyu, Nyingmas, other Zhen Tongpas make fun of the Golukpas for considering emptiness to be an object.
And you're really just saying, though, that there's the subtle difference in how they describe it that makes it, that emphasizes the absence more.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. As a negative experience, a non-implicative negation is how it's described. That reality is a non-implicative negation. And here we have a positive entailment or a positive observation. Let's see. In this way, the term recollection refers to all that constitutes the factors of enlightenment, all the different qualities that are cultivated and accumulated on the path of familiarization. The path, or path of cultivation is what they're calling the fourth path here, is referred to as such, meaning the path that cultivates the factors of enlightenment. Because it involves eradicating those stains that are eliminated through cultivation. So this is a reference to an interesting way of characterizing the path and the way the path, the path and the nature of the obscurations that are uprooted along the path. There's two kinds of obscurations in terms of the way they're uprooted. One type of obscuration is uprooted by prajna, by understanding. And that's the obscurations, the cognitive obscuration that's uprooted at the path of seeing and later at the path of no more learning. And the klesha obscuration is uprooted by cultivating virtuous qualities, like sort of reversing the karmic accumulation of the latent negative tendencies. So they say that there's obscurations that are overcome by wisdom and obscurations that are overcome by the path. And that's why the path of familiarization takes so long, is that it's just like this very, there's a lot of habitual latent tendencies to overcome, and they can only be overcome by habituating oneself to what it was experienced in the path of seeing. Whereas the path of seeing is instantaneous.
Could you state again the way you described how the klesha obscurations are overcome?
They're overcome by familiarizing, by cultivating virtue, that are the antidotes for negative.
With an antidote approach, okay.
An antidote approach. And also by familiarizing oneself over and over again with what was seen in equipoise.
Which, does that basically mean equipoise over and over again? I mean, during continuing, or
I think it's like recollecting equipoise in post-meditation.
Ah, okay.
And, you know, what does that mean? I don't know. it's like us sort of recollecting something we have to do.
Right. So it's like taking it on the road.
Yeah. Keeping it in mind. Minding it. Identification. The sixth topic contains two further subdivisions, an identification of the essence of the final fundamental transformation and a detailed explanation of its unique features. An identification of the essence of the final fundamental transformation is the first. The treatise states, arriving at the identity of that refers to suchness, divested of stain. So here we're talking about the achievement of the eighth bhumi, where the stains have been eradicated. We're no longer creating or sustaining any stains. Where all appears simply as suchness, so we have purified vision. This is also the establishment of fundamental transformation. So at this point, we're established in certainty of achieving Buddhahood. And it's interesting to see this text make such a big deal of it, so to speak, to use our informal language, to really single it out as almost like dividing the path into six parts as opposed to five, dividing the path of cultivation into two sections. Arrive on 33 on top, arriving at the identity of that refers to suchness, divested of stains, where all appears simply as suchness. Because the path of cultivation has removed all remaining stains, thereby divesting suchness of stains. Once this has taken place, all that appears is, by virtue of the final path, simply suchness. Arriving at the identity of that is thus when the object is simply that. This is also the thorough establishment of fundamental transformation. To arrive at the identity of suchness, the way all phenomena truly are, refers to suchness being divested of all adventitious stains. Once this has taken place, the way things appear completely matches the way they actually are. In other words, all phenomena appear as nothing but suchness. Moreover, at this time, fundamental transformation has reached a point of completion. Though this fundamental transformation is indeed present from the first ground onward, on this final ground, this transformation is final and complete. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's the 10th bhumi here. It's beginning to sound like the end of the bhumis. Let's see what happens afterwards. The unique features of this fundamental transformation is divided. So this is where the text then branches out yet further into more detail. This is further divided into a summary and a detailed explanation. And we learn that the detailed explanation is tenfold. So a summary on the first topic, the treatise states, so the summary is just a listing of the 10 topics as headings. This tenfold way of accessing the fundamental transformation is unsurpassable because one accesses the essence, substance, individuals, distinct features, requirements, basis, directing the mind, application flaws, and benefits. And those should add up to 10. Essence, substance, individuals, distinct features, requirements, basis, directing the mind, application flaws, and benefits does indeed make 10. It may be asked, how is one to access this fundamental transformation and do so in an unsurpassed manner? This tenfold way of accessing the fundamental transformation is unsurpassable because one accesses, again, the essence, substance, individuals, as figure, requirements, basis, directing the mind, application, flaws, and benefits. There are 10 topics whereby one may come to understand this fundamental transformation and access it through practice. This way of accessing it is unsurpassable insofar as these 10 enable one to thoroughly comprehend the nature of this transformation in a precise manner, and by putting this understanding into practice, attain the final result. What are these 10 topics? They are, once again, etc., etc., etc. So let's dive into the details. Explanation of the same. The first is essence. Accessing the essence refers to suchness devoid of stains. As the adventitious stains and suchness do not appear and appear. funny language, right? Accessing the essence refers to suchness devoid of stains. As or when the adventitious stains and suchness respectively do not appear, the adventitious stains do not appear and suchness appears, right? Accessing the essence or nature of the fundamental transformation refers to suchness devoid of stains, as the adventitious stains and suchness respectively do not appear and appear respectively. Thus, the nature of this fundamental transformation is presented on the top of 35. Accessing this nature or essence of this fundamental transformation refers to suchness, the intrinsic nature devoid of adventitious stains, meaning that these adventitious stains and suchness do not and do appear respectively. Hence, the intrinsic nature appears as it is, in essence, devoid of stains. Substance on the second topic. The treatise states, accessing the substantial entities involves the transformation of the shared awareness of the environment into suchness. So the shared awareness of the environment, that was the common latent tendencies, the karmic momentum that is shared by sentient beings who inhabit the same realm, such as the earth lemurs who inhabit the earth, have a shared experience of their environment. They have a shared projection of the environment. So once again, accessing substantial entities involves the transformation of the shared awareness of the environment into suchness. So the outer container, the environment, is resolved into suchness, and the transformation of the sutra's basic field of phenomena into suchness is the second one, I guess, involves these things: the transformation of the shared awareness of the environment into suchness, the transformation of the sutra's basic field of phenomena. Let's find out what that is, into suchness, and the transformation.
Could that be like the Abhidharma, you know, skandhas and all of that? That basically what we Maybe. Think of self?
Yeah, sort of.
Personal, like, essentially, it's the personal as opposed to the shared.
I guess so. It might be like the dependent nature or something. Let's see how.
I'm just thinking the sutras field of phenomena. They might be thinking about what is it taught in the sutras about what are.
It's a lot easier to wait till the commentary.
Yeah. Sorry.
and the transformations of the three transformations of the unshared awareness of the realm of sentient beings into so each sentient being's mind stream. So those three things are transformed into suchness. So Vasubandhu via Kempo Shenga says, accessing substantial entities involves the complete transformation of the shared awareness of the environment into suchness, the complete transformation of the sutra's basic field of phenomena to suchness, didn't add anything for us there. And the complete transformation there and shared awareness of the realm of sentient beings into suchness, again, not adding anything. Thus, the entities that undergo fundamental transformation are involved in a fundamental transformation into three types of suchness. There are also three different fruitions that ensue in relation to these three. These fruitions are those of appearance, instruction, and complete revelation. Interesting scheme. Let's see what Meepom says. Accessing the entities or substance of this complete and fundamental transformation is taught in this present context in terms of three categories. First is the complete and fundamental transformation into suchness of the awareness or perceptions of the external universe, which appear as though they were shared. Second, as though they were shared. Second is the transformation into suchness of that which expresses the appearances of names, words, and letters in the sutra's basic field of phenomena. That did not really help us much. Third is the fundamental transformation into suchness of the minds and mental events, the collections of awareness of the realm of sentient beings, which comprise distinct mind streams that are not shared. So one and three are fairly straightforward. Number two remains elusive. Let's see what else he says. There are no phenomena whatsoever that are not included in the basic field of phenomena, which is used in the second one. Therefore, when this fundamental transformation takes place, there is an inconceivable range of qualities within the undefiled basic field corresponding to the totality of subjects in all their variety. That's an elusive statement. Corresponding to the totality of subjects in all their variety. So, what are subjects? Subjects seem to be like topics, or they could be the holders of objects. Subjects could be the perceivers of objects. It's not immediately clear. Let's see what else. Nevertheless, here they are presented in terms of the attainment of the three bodies. The extension of suchness without limitation, in which everything that appears is the environment, and by extension the body undergoes a fundamental transformation, is the attainment of the body of qualities. Second, the mastery of the uninterrupted and exhaustible qualities, the melodious sound of the Dharma, the fundamental transformation of all the conditioned verbal factors exemplified by the sutras, is the attainment of the body of complete enjoyment. The fundamental transformation of all that comprises the mind, the all ground, and the seven collections of consciousness that depend upon it, is the attainment of the emanation body and its attendant knowledge of the five wakefulnesses. Alternatively, so this is an interesting presentation of the scheme of the Trikaya, right? Not your average Trikaya presentation. So Nirmanakaya is presented first as the attainment of the body of qualities. And then the Sambhogakaya is presented as the conditioned verbal factors exemplified by the sutras. And then the Dharmakaya is presented as the transformation of the eight consciousnesses, and described as the emanation body and as possessing the five Buddha wisdoms, which is not the common presentation. Usually the Sambhogakaya has the five Buddha wisdoms. Alternatively, these may be viewed respectively as the completely pure appearance of the realms and bodies, the teachings, the teaching of the sacred Dharma, and the revelation of all domains of knowledge through the wakefulness that knows things as they are and in their multiplicity. So, these three may be viewed respectively as the completely pure appearance of realms and bodies. So the transformation of our experience of the environment into the experience of a Buddha's experience of her or his environment as a Pure Land. And then secondly, the completely pure of, and then the teaching of the sacred Dharma is the second one. And then the revelation of all domains of knowledge through the wakefulness that knows things as they are in their multiplicity. That's the way that omniscience is described. And the Dharmakaya is the home of omniscience. That which comprises the embodied along with verbal sounds. So the Nirmanakaya and the Sambhogakaya, it sounds like, may appear in a shared manner prior to this fundamental transformation. The mind, by contrast, is not shared. So, sentient beings may have a shared experience of Nirmanakaya and Sambhogakaya, but not of Dharmakaya. When fundamental transformation takes place, however, all phenomena appear as suchness. Since there is nothing apart from this suchness, and nothing impure remains, we may draw a distinction in terms of there being nothing but pure self-appearance. Nevertheless, while such appearances do occur from the perspective of those who have yet to undergo this fundamental transformation, suchness will continue to manifest in a differentiated manner in terms of a distinct teacher and teaching. For example, on the third topic, the treatise states, as for accessing individuals, the first two are the complete transformation of suchness for bodhisattvas and buddhas. The last also pertains to listeners and self-realized buddhas. As for accessing individuals, the first two are the complete transformation of suchness for bodhisattvas and buddhas. The last also pertains to listeners. And so Shravakas and Pratyeka Buddhas, the Dharmakaya, interesting. So that is the idea of the bodhisattva and the Mahayana, is that the Shravakas and Pratyeka Buddhas don't bring about the form bodies. They don't bring about the Nirmanakaya and the Sambhogakaya because they don't cultivate the virtues on the paths of accumulations, preparation, and familiarization in the way that the bodhisattvas do, that are required for the manifestation of those two form bodies. As for accessing individuals, the first two fruitions of the fundamental transformation into suchness are unshared in the sense of being the complete transformation of suchness for bodhisattvas and buddhas respectively, because the last fundamental transformation also pertains to listeners and self-realized buddhas, it is shared. When it comes to accessing the fundamental transformation as it pertains to certain individuals, the first two forms of fundamental transformation that were described above are complete and fundamental transformations into suchness that are taken as objects by Buddhas and Bodhisattvas respectively. In terms of the three kayas, the body of qualities is the object of a Buddha, while the body of perfect enjoyment is the object of the Bodhisattvas. In terms of the three kayas, the body of qualities is the object of the Buddha, while the body of perfect enjoyment is the object of the Bodhisattvas. Nirmanakaya is the body of qualities. The reason for this is that the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas have mastery over the limitless appearances of the sacred Dharma, pure realms, and completely pure bodies, while the listeners do not. The latter transformation is the fundamental transformation of the mind, which pertains to the listeners and solitary Buddhas as well. How so? In terms of the three kayas, the listeners and solitary Buddhas are able to see the emanation body with its all-encompassing wakefulness. In terms of the three kayas, the listeners and solitary Buddhas are able to see the emanation body with its all-encompassing wakefulness. Alternatively, we may say that they have undergone the latter fundamental transformation in a merely partial manner, insofar as theirs is a fundamental transformation of the afflicted consciousness, 7, that is based upon the all-ground, 8, Hence, while it does seem to be taught that the latter fundamental transformation is common to all four types of noble beings, and they're counting Buddhism, Bodhisattva separately, the fundamental transformation of the mind experienced by listeners and solitary Buddhas is, of course, incomplete. They don't have a full experience of Dharmakaya. Okay, so then the distinct features, and we're in the list of the 10 aspects of what? Of what? These 10 aspects of what? Ten aspects of the World Series?
No.
Of the transformation?
The unique features of the fundamental transformation.
Yes. Thank you. let's see. Okay, distinct features. The fourth topic, the treatise states, accessing its distinct features involves the distinct features of the completely pure realms of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, as well as, due to the attainment of the body of qualities, which is the way they're describing Nirmanakaya, the body of perfect enjoyments, Mokkha, and the emanation body. Was that how they described the Dharmakaya here?
Or is that the Nirmanakaya? Seems like they keep flipping them around. Emanation body is the one that they associated with the five wakefulnesses.
Okay, yeah.
On page 36.
Emanation body. Okay, so that's the Nirmanakaya. Dharmakaya. Oh, let's see. Accessing its distinct features involves the distinct feature of the completely pure realms of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, as well as, due to the attainment of the body of qualities, the body of perfect enjoyment, and the emanation body, and vision, instruction, and mastery. These are the distinct features in terms of attainment. Accessing its distinct features involves the distinct feature of the completely pure realms of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, as well as, due to the attainment of the body of qualities, the body of perfect enjoyment and the emanation body, respectively, and the vision of all objects of cognition, the vision, instruction in the form of wondrous and inconceivable entrances to the vast and profound, and mastery in accomplishing the welfare of others. These are the distinct features in terms of attainment. Vision, instruction, mastery. Accessing the distinct features of this complete and fundamental transformation refers to the fundamental transformation of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, as opposed to the others. How is this brought about? This final fundamental transformation is brought about through the power of the non-conceptual wakefulness. Mipham mentions that, which is why Carl Bernholtz wrote that whole presentation of what non-conceptual wakefulness is, which is very interesting. Again, this final fundamental transformation is brought about through the power of the non-conceptual wakefulness that thoroughly realizes the twofold absence of self. And what is this like? All phenomena appear as the nature of a thorough and total fundamental transformation, complete enlightenment, or transcendence of suffering. The completely pure realms that extend throughout the regions of space are a distinct feature of this fundamental transformation. Likewise, in attaining the body of qualities, body of perfect enjoyment, and emanation body, respectively, one has pure wakefulness that beholds all phenomena. Respectively, one has pure wakefulness that beholds all phenomena, teaches the wondrous Dharma, and vast Dharma, the great vehicle, and through the attainment of the unobstructed power of super knowledge and other such factors, one has complete mastery in benefiting others in line with one's commitment. Respectively, Nirmanakaya, Samogakaya, Dharmakaya.
Are you sure that's not the reverse? Because that It seems like
does. Emanation body would have to be Tulku, would have to be.
It does. I think it does. And especially because they're talking in that last line about benefiting others. I mean, that's definitely Nirmanakaya.
It's the attainment of the body of special qualities. So,
I think the qualities one has to be Dharmakaya.
Interesting. The last one has to be Dharmakaya or Nirmanakaya?
No, I think the body of the first one I think has to be Dharmakaya, and I think the emanation one has to be Nirmanakaya. And it seems, I mean, that's just what it seems like the more they...
Well, interesting that just the fact that it's confusing is quite amusing.
Well, it is interesting that they completely don't use, like, never make the direct association with the kayas. I mean, they don't use that.
Yes, I have to look at some other translations. So let's mark that.
Oh, right. So, I have one. I should do. Try that.
And in fact, we looked at one earlier, right? We looked at the one by Carl.
I think this one by Chandra Rinpoche too.
Yeah. Well, we looked at his introduction. We didn't look at his translation. Did you get his translation?
Yeah.
Cool. So we're in distinct, let's see, individuals. Oh, the root text is summary level. Oh, look. Here, let me share this.
In the glossary in the back, it says that the emanation is the Nirmanakaya.
Excellent.
On page 87.
Thank you. That's great. So there you go. So here's Carl's translation of the root text for distinct features, which is on page 38 in our book. In our book, it says, accessing its distinct features involves the distinct feature of the completely pure realms of Buddhism, Bodhisattvas, as well as due to the attainment of the body of qualities. The first is Dharmakaya, as Cynthia was implying or concluding. The second is Sambhogakikaya, and the third is Nirmanakaya. Cool. Which is due to the distinction of having obtained seeing, instruction, and mastery, respectively. Cool. Okay. So, let's take a quick peek back at this. Like going back to page 35 at the bottom. So accessing the entities or substance of this complete fundamental transformation is taught in the present context in terms of three categories. First, the complete fundamental transformation into suchness of the awareness or perceptions of the external universe, which appear as though they were shared. Second is the transformation suchness of that which expresses the middle one we're fine on. The third is the fundamental transformation of suchness of the minds and mental events, the collection of awareness of the realm of sentient beings. There are no phenomena whatsoever that are not included in the basic field of phenomena, Dharmadhatu. Therefore, when this fundamental transformation takes place, there is an inconceivable range of qualities within the undefiled basic field corresponding to the totality of subjects in all their variety. Nevertheless, here they're presented in terms of the attainment of three bodies, the extension of suchness without limit, in which everything that appears as the environment and by extension the body undergoes a fundamental transformation, is the attainment of the body of qualities. So, is that Dharmakaya? Second, the mastery of the uninterrupted existence of the sound of the Dharma, the fundamental transformation of the condition of verbal factors, is the attainment of the body of complete enjoyment. Fundamental transformation of all that comprises the mind, the all ground of the seven consciousnesses, is the attainment of the emanation body, its attendant knowledge of the five wakefulnesses. So they place the five Buddha families in the Nirmanakaya. Five Buddha wisdoms.
But this is like, there's a book by Trungpa Rinpoche where he, actually, I can't remember which title it is, but where he talks about essentially the mapping of the consciousnesses to the wisdoms. So I think that is a, anyway, that seems plausible.
Yeah, and he correlates them to the kayas.
Because it's also more about manifestation. Like, Dharmakaya doesn't need manifestation, right?
Certainly not emanation, yeah. That which comprises, so let's see. Alternatively, these may be reviewed. So this is at the end of the big middle paragraph on 36. These may be viewed respectively as the completely pure appearance of the realms and bodies of the teaching of the sacred Dharma and the revelation of all domains of knowledge through the wakefulness that knows things as they are in their multiplicity. And that's referring to the attainment of the emanation body and its wakefulnesses, right?
The last part of the line, yeah.
Yeah. But there just seem to be three parts to it, right? Alternatively, these can be viewed respectively as one, the completely pure appearance of the realms and bodies. Two, the teaching of the sacred Dharma would be Sambhogakaya. And three, the revelation of all domains of knowledge through the wakefulness that knows things as they are in their multiplicity.
Right, which I was reading it as another statement of all three kayas, right?
Yeah. But they place omniscience then in the Nirmanakaya? That's bizarre.
But, I mean, don't we talk about coming to a point where we understand, I mean, do you understand things as they are, the nature and the variety?
That's the, in every other text I've seen, that's the Dharmakaya.
Is that?
Yeah.
Huh, okay.
Well, very interesting. As so, continuing on 37, as for accessing individuals, the first two are the complete transformation of suchness for bodhisattvas and Buddhas. So the Dharmakaya and Sambhogakaya are for Buddhas and bodhisattvas. The last also pertains to listeners and self-realized in Nirmanakaya. For accessing, let's skip that. When it comes to accessing the fundamental transformation as it pertains to certain individual, first two are forms are fundamental transformation that were described above are complete and fundamental transformation to suchness that are taken as objects by Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. In terms of the three kayas, the body of qualities is the object of a Buddha, while the body of perfect enjoyment is the object of Bodhisattva. The reason for this is that the Buddha's Bodhisattva is the master of limitless appearances, rather, of the sacred Dharma, pure realm, and completely pure bodies, while listeners do not. The latter transformation, the third, is the fundamental transformation of the mind, which pertains to the listeners and solitary Buddhas as well. In terms of the three kayas, the listeners and solitary Buddhas are able to see the emanation body with all its all-encompassing wakefulness. Alternatively, we may say that they have undergone the latter fundamental transformation in a merely partial manner. Insofar as there is a fundamental transformation, the afflicted consciousness that is based upon their all ground. Theirs is a fundamental transformation of the seventh consciousness that is based upon the eighth consciousness. However, while it does seem to be taught that the latter fundamental transformation is common to all four types of noble beings, the fundamental transformation of the mind experienced by listeners and solitary Buddhas is incomplete.
Can I ask one question about the paragraph right before that one? The word object, I'm just not entirely clear about what the way in which the word object is being used. that are taken as objects by Buddhas? And does that mean?
I'm sorry, where is this?
This is the just the prior paragraph before that last one. So it's the page 37 underneath the indented part. And where it
when it comes to accessing the fundamental transformation as it pertains to certain individuals, the first two forms of fundamental transformation, Dharmakaya and Sambhogakaya, were described above, are complete fundamental transformations in the suchness that are taken as objects.
So, yeah, I just wondered if, are you clear about what object means here? Taken as objects by Buddhists. And, I mean, I can conjecture some things, but I just wondered if you have a clear. And then the body of qualities is the object of a Buddha, and then the body of perfect eternal. Is it that that's what they can see? Or, I mean, I know that it's said that only bodhisattvas can see some Sambhogakaya manifestations, right?
Yes, that is. Yes, in the next sense, in terms of three kinds, the body of qualities is the object of a Buddha, so Buddhists can experience it.
So, yeah, that's what I'm wondering, is does object mean that which can be experienced by?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure, because it was just...
Yeah, it's a funny utilization, isn't it?
A little bit, yeah.
So then let's just finish up. We went through distinct features, but just to visit it again now. Accessing its distinct features involve distinct features of completely pure realms of the Buddhism, Bodhisattvas, as well as due to the attainment of the body qualities, the second, the body of perfect enjoyment, and the emanation body, sorry, the three, and vision, instruction, and mastery. These are the distinct features in terms of attainment. Accessing, that doesn't really add much. So, Mipham, accessing the distinct features of the complete fundamental transformation, refers to the fundamental transformation of the Buddha and Bodhisattva. How is this brought about? This final fundamental transformation is brought about through the power of the non-conceptual wakefulness, the thoroughly realized twofold absence. What is it like? All phenomena appears the nature of a thorough and total fundamental transformation, complete alignment. The completely pure realms that extend throughout the reaches of space are a distinct feature of this fundamental transformation. Likewise, attaining the body of qualities, the body of perfect enjoyment, and emanation body, respectively, one has pure wakefulness that beholds all phenomena. The Dharmakaya teaches the wonders profound and vast. Dharma is the great vehicle, Sambhogakaya, through the attainment of the unobstructed power of super knowledge and other such factors. One has complete mastery and benefit in others in line with one's commitment, Nirmanakaya. That seems more straightforward. Very good. Thank you. These are distinct features of their attainment, which is superior to that of the listeners and solitary Buddhas. So let us pause there. And we'll continue with these 10 points next week. Next week. Right, that we won't have the conclusion until much later that night. So it'll be a very helpful distraction to go through this instead of obsessing over interim results as Kamala crushes Donald Trump. Yes! By this merit may all attain omniscience, may it defeat the enemy wrongdoing from the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death from the ocean of samsara. May I free all beings by the confidence of the golden sun of the great east. May the lotus garden of the Rigdon's wisdom bloom. May the dark ignorance of sentient beings be dispelled. May all beings enjoy profound, brilliant glory. Thank you, everyone. Nice to see you. Take care. Be
Thank
well.
Thank you.
You
stay chill, everybody.